Here we are back for another day, another 50 cents. It's Bob McCowan. It's John Shannon on the Bob McCowan podcast on your favorite podcast provider and on Sirius Channel 167.
Canada Talks.
At 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Right. That's 3 Pacific.
I'm guessing most people know that 6 Eastern is 3 Pacific. I don't think they need education from you.
No, but here's the thing. As a guy that grew up in the Pacific time zone.
Well, you just want to make sure it's mentioned.
Yeah.
Those of us in the East have not forgotten about.
Well, more importantly, to pay respect to that time zone. And, there's lots of people that live in the Pacific time zone.
Well, what about the other time zones?
Okay, so.
You don't give a crap about the other time
zones. We can only care about the
one you're in and the one you grew up in.
We can talk about Mountain Time. We can talk about Central Time. Oh, well, we can talk Atlantic Time. And we can talk
Newfoundland
Time.
I didn't bring this up. You did.
So
you didn't mention Mountain Time. You didn't mention Central Time. You didn't mention Newfoundland Time.
Tomorrow, I'm going to mention all the time zones.
Too late.
No, you've
already made the big mistake.
Time is never too late.
Offended. Two-thirds of Canada. Well, actually,
not really.
More than two-thirds.
What, landmass-wise, yes, but not population.
Yeah. I'm a land guy.
You just want more land. Give me land.
One thing about land, they're not making any more of it.
Don't tell the Dutch that. The Dutch are making more land all the time.
Well, the way the icebergs are melting, they better build more dikes.
Well, New York City. I mean, the amount of reclaimed land on the lower West Side. Holy smokes, they've done a good job there.
Yeah, the beach is going to be in your backyard before you know it. We're going to talk.
By the way, Pacific time zone story today.
What?
It's a Pacific time zone story today. That's why we're.
There's
doing
nobody it. On this program from the Pacific time zone.
Yet.
Everybody's in the Eastern time zone.
Okay.
Because our guest escapes to the Eastern time zone at every opportunity. Now, it hasn't been.
You don't say escape. You make it sound like he wants to leave Bengal. He doesn't want to leave. Well, he loves it there.
Has he been there?
Yes, he has. Don't stop it. Come on. You're just stirring the pot.
How many times have we talked to him this year? Twice. Where has he been on both occasions?
Raleigh, North Carolina.
Thank you. I rest my case.
Okay, who is it?
Jim Rutherford joins us after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you. Well, it's been a while since we talked to this gentleman, this friend. It was when, John? Shortly after he signed on with the Vancouver Canucks?
I think that's probably accurate. We had Jimmy when he was on sabbatical out of Pittsburgh, and then we had him just after he signed with the Canucks. Yeah, so it's been, gosh, maybe 8 months.
Jim Rutherford is with us. Jimmy, you look well, and fairly well rested. All good for you?
Yeah, it's been a real good break here, and getting excited now to get going again.
Well, when we talked to you, my recollection was that you told us you were going to be, I'm going to paraphrase here, patient, take the time to observe this franchise, get to know the players, the individuals, the makeup, before you made any decisions. And you were, you did that. But the performance of your team in the last part of the year, essentially since Boudreaux was hired as the coach, how much did that influence what you thought you might have to do and what you ultimately have done so far?
Well, we need to do more than what we've done, but you can only do things if you have a partner to do it. And of course, everybody deals with the cap and everything like that makes deals harder to make. But to your point, Bruce did a really good job getting the most out of this team in the second half of the season. And it gave us a real good picture of what we had. And we felt that we needed to get more balance with our forwards. I believe that we've done that. And we have to address our defense, which has been harder to do in the offseason. There were some defensemen available in free agency. It didn't work for us, whether it was term or what they were looking for. So it appears that it's going to take longer to address the defense than we would have liked. And we're going to have to do it through trades.
Jimmy, the whole concept of what you've tried to do philosophically, changing the front office the way you did, changing some of the coaching staff the way you did, was this something you had as part of the arrival, your arrival, and you and Patrick working together had contemplated that probably needed to happen?
Well, there were openings in the front office when I got there. You know, there were people that had already been moved out prior to me getting there. And so that made it easier to make those choices. I had a plan in place. I can speak more clear about the people that we have now because I've worked with them over a number of months. And I'm really, really pleased and really proud of the group we have in hockey operations. So that's been a good step. That ultimately will translate into improving the team. Of course, it never happens as quick as everybody would like it to. And as for the coaching staff, there were just some circumstances around that. Different circumstances, actually. You know, Scotty Walker did a good job with us, and he made the choice that he wanted to be closer to home. So that was his choice. Brad Shaw, that was another one where he became an associate coach. So he got promoted, went back to work with Torts, who he's worked with before, and they have good chemistry together. So there were some circumstances around that, but we feel really good about the replacements that we have. And Trent Cull did a terrific job in Abbotsford last year. We just kept bringing players up one after another, and Abbotsford kept winning. And he's a guy that has attention to details. He's a former NHL defenseman. He can help our defense, so that should be seamless. And then with Mike Yeo, he's got a lot of experience as an assistant and as a head coach. He knows Bruce. So the chemistry of our coaching staff should be good for this year.
Yeah, actually, the Yeo hiring was an interesting one. How did Bruce view that, or that was it Bruce's idea?
It was Bruce's idea, and that was important to Patrick and I, you know, to let the coach have one of his own guys or all of his own guys, who, however it ended up being. But certainly, when you look at last year, Bruce came in, he inherited a coaching staff. That's always hard to do when they're used to working with one head coach and a new guy comes in. Sometimes there's a little difference of opinion and a little separation there. And so now we got to the point in the off season where Bruce could make his own choice. He felt very strong about Mike Yeo. And since we've had a chance to interview him and get to know him, I feel we've made a good choice.
On the topic of Bruce, not that it was a negotiation, but the whole concept of Bruce having an opt-out on June the 1st was very public in Vancouver, very public around the NHL, which was very surprising to a lot of us. How do you think that you came out of that whole situation?
Well, we come out of it fine. I mean, it seems like a lot of things come public in sports, and the people that get that information work hard to get it. And unfortunately, somebody felt it was necessary to share it with them. But anyways, you know, as I said before, Bruce did a terrific job. I've known Bruce since we were in our early 20s, and we've known each other for a long time. And we just felt that getting a bigger picture of what the Bruce and the coaching staff can do made more sense before that we get into giving an extension. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like all these things, they get batted around publicly. A lot of people that bat them around don't have enough information to really speak about it, but they do anyways. But it come out fine. Bruce is our coach. We hope that he gets on the same role that he was on last year. And everything will turn out fine for everybody involved.
There's no secret that you have, cap issues. You're not alone in that.
Well, there's 31 other teams almost, Bob.
Well, that's the point. But truthfully, there isn't a lot of room there. Was that an issue in terms of Klingberg? Because he seemed to be a guy that would be a perfect fit for what you need in Vancouver. Jimmy?
Yeah, well, we were not in a position to go after a player like that. But looking for a right shot defenseman, it would be ideal right now. We really, our defense right now is good enough to win, okay? But there's question marks there, okay? We've got Rathbone, who's a young player that's tracking in the right direction, deserves the opportunity to be in Vancouver this year. If he comes in and plays the way he played in the American League last year and stays healthy, that's going to improve our defense. The big question mark is Pullman. Pullman, when he's playing and without any injuries, is a good, solid defenseman, can actually play in our top four. But there's question marks around his health, and that's gonna be something we're going to have to watch. If all those guys stay healthy, our team is strong enough to be a playoff team. But if something goes wrong in that defense, which we know could, that's going to be an issue. So we'll continue to look at our defense. We've got to rebuild that right side, get it younger over time. We'd like to do it today. Those opportunities aren't there. It always sounds like I'm preaching patience. I'm just preaching reality. If the right person's there and we can plug them into the Canucks, we're going to do it as soon as we can.
On that point, how would you, I mean, with the cap being so flat, with everybody pinching pennies, this is a strange summer, isn't it? It really is quite different than most, isn't it?
Well, people talk about teams being in cap trouble, but in fairness to the general managers, you know, if we didn't have COVID, we didn't go through what we've gone through over the last couple of years, the cap would be almost $90 million now. Mm-hmm. And all teams are going to be, not all teams, but the contending teams are always going to play that game. They're going to be up against the cap. But you wouldn't have as many teams up against it, and you wouldn't have the kind of deals that are going on where you're paying a team to take a player from you. And so that's the reason we are where we are. But now that we're there, we just have to figure out how to work our way through it or make the best of what we have with the players we have. Certainly Bruce came in and got the most out of the players that we have. And that's what we have to continue to do until we can make the right changes.
Do you have a philosophy on giving up players in order to create cap space? Sometimes I guess you have to do it, but I wonder whether theoretically you object to that or are opposed to it, or you just live with it.
Well, I'm not opposed to it. I'm one of the first guys that did it with Fleury, and that was tough to do. You know, we love the guy, and but it was obvious that at that point that something had to be done. He did not want to be in that two goalie system in Pittsburgh anymore, and so I worked with him and got him to Vegas. But it's not something that you take great pride in doing. You do it if you have to do it. Now in Vancouver, we're trying to gather more assets. We're trying to get more draft picks and more younger players. We might get ourselves in a position at some point that we have to do it, but we'd prefer not to give some kind of an asset, younger asset, in order for a team to take a contract from us.
What do you do with JT Miller?
Well, it's been an interesting process, only because it's become so public and there's been so many stories thrown out in the public about him that have not been accurate. And he was our best forward last year. He's a very good player. He'll be a good player for a long time. We will. We would like to re-sign him if possible. Mm-hmm. We're a long ways apart. I think it'll be hard to get to a point where he'll have a comfort level on what we're able to do. And if we can't do that, then it's the obvious. Then we'll have to do the best we can to put him in a place where he's going to get his contract, and we're going to get the right assets back that can help the Canucks in the future.
But you said something, because the one thing that's always amazed me about Miller has been so good for Vancouver. He has played well for your club. I mean, he's got leadership skills. He's still great around the net. How do you, I mean, is it just a case? I mean, and you don't want to have to go through what Brad Treliving had, a hellish month of the last 30 days between the Goodrow thing, which they let him go to free agency, and Matthew Tkachuk, who said, I'm not going to sign here long term. So how do you manage that, particularly in such a public scenario in Vancouver?
Well, if we get to the point that we know that we can't bring him back, we have to try to get something for him.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll do. But we're not going to be able to replace this guy, to your point, how good he's been in Vancouver. He's been very, very good year in and year out. He has a career year last year. He may not get 99 points again this year. He may only get 80 points, but he's still an impact player and one of the top forwards on the Canucks team, if not the top forward. And I believe the way he takes care of himself, he's going to be able to play for a long time. He's going to be able to help, if it's not the Canucks, it's somebody else. So we will continue through this process, see where it goes. I know Patrick Alvin talks to the JT's agent periodically, and we'll just see where it goes. But hopefully we can figure out a way to keep him, because he is a very, very good player.
Do you have a timeline, Jim? Like, can you see him starting the season with you?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we don't have him signed and nobody's made an offer that makes sense for us, then you don't have any other choice. Where it gets really to the pressure point is a month leading into the trade deadline. If something hasn't been done by then the pressure is really on us at that point, because we really don't want to be in a position that we don't get anything in return if we can't keep them.
With Jim Rutherford of the Vancouver Canucks, I may be completely off base here, but one of the things that I've observed over the last couple of years is more and more players seeming to want to go home or closer to home, or at least cross the border. If they are U.S.-born players wanting to go and play in the U.S., if they're playing in Canada, for players that are Canadian coming back home, I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs are an example of guys that have come back and finished their careers.
After decades of not wanting to play here.
Yeah.
That was a reality in Toronto.
Well, and I wonder whether you think there is a pattern that has developed or is starting to develop here of players wanting to play on the other side of the 49th parallel.
Well, there could be a little bit of a pattern, but I don't think it's 100%. There's a reason to have free agency. The union works for the players. They've negotiated free agency at a certain age, and that's why the players have it. So they have those options of picking where they want to go. But there are players that like it where they are. And it's the responsibility of the team to make sure that it's a good situation. Even if it's really good, it doesn't mean that a player's not going to leave, because like you pointed out, a player may want to play closer to home. But we all have, every franchise has something to offer to these players in order for them to stay there. But they may make that choice that there's a place that they'd like to play, prefer to play other than the place they've been playing.
Well, I mean, you just went through your first draft as the head guy for hockey for the Vancouver Canucks. Are you at the point where that is a becomes a factor in who you draft? Would you be less reluctant to draft an American-born player?
No. We'll draft the player that's available that we think is going to do the most for the Canucks. You know, I think you may have a better chance of keeping these players if you have them for a period of time. Now, it's showing that some players that have been there a long time still decide to leave. But, you know, you draft the player, you have them for at least 7 years, and over that period of time, you have to get to the point where the player just really wants to play there. I don't think that JT Miller has any problems with staying in Vancouver. But right now, he's in a position that he's worked hard for to get a big contract and get the kind of contract that he thinks he should get. If the Canucks can't get to that level, then the obvious is going to happen. He's going to say, well, I'd like to go somewhere else where I believe I can get it.
Well, how frustrating is it for a guy, for a manager and or a president of hockey operations then, when you, I think, assume that the cap's not going to go up very much next year, and everybody's been told it's probably going to go up the year after in 2024. Is that something you think the players can rationally accept and understand?
Well, I don't know. I mean, everybody has to accept the position we're in for the obvious reason. I don't know, you know, it's hurt some players, obviously. You know, you got players at the end of their career that it's hit them harder than they expected. But, you know, we talk about this in sports, but we're talking numbers, big numbers, that when we say it affects them, but overall, it's not going to affect their overall life like COVID, like this pandemic has affected most people. It's affected people where they've lost everything. So I feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about this, quite frankly, because I know how it's affected people outside of sports, and it's affected them a lot more than it has the people that are in it.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Bob mentioned being at the draft and spending time there. What was it like to be at a draft table with a whole new bunch of people?
It was great. Because I really respect and like our staff. And we've worked hard to make the changes that we felt were necessary. Some were already made before we got there. But the people that we've added since I've got there are people that take great pride in their job. They work really hard. Our staff communicates well together. And I like this staff. We won't get to be a contender as quick as we'd like, or the fans would like, or the media would like. We'd like it to happen sooner or later, but I feel comfortable with the staff that we're going to get there.
Just curious, how much, you know, you got Patrick with you. How much training's not the right word, but how much counseling and tutoring do you do with some of your younger people and some of the, like with Emily Castanguay, who obviously had a great background as an agent. Cammy was in the scouting and as a longtime hockey person. How much tutoring are you doing as you go through this process?
It just goes through, it just comes naturally. Okay. We just go about our business. Obviously our offices are all together. We talk to each other on a regular basis. If any of them want to come and ask me questions about certain situations, I'm there. And they do that, okay? But I don't go out of my way to have seminars or something, you know, or weekly meetings to say, you know, here's how we have to do things. The reason that I've hired people with different backgrounds is for them to come in with their new ideas. And I want their new ideas to come naturally. I just want to be there for them. If they've got questions, I'm going to give them my opinion. They can still end up do what they want, but that's the way this process should work. And it's been working pretty well so far.
In your time between the Pittsburgh job and the Vancouver job, had you plotted this type of thing out? Was this something you said, I'm going to have an action plan?
Well, I don't know if you could say I plotted it out. I would say for 10 years now, I've thought about if I had the opportunity to put together a front office staff, a hockey office staff, what would it look like? And so that's been going through my mind probably for 10 years. I got to Vancouver. The openings were there. I got to do what I wanted to do, and I feel really good about it.
With Jim Rutherford, and we'll take a quick break, come back and chat some more after these messages. Bob McCowan, it's John Shannon, and Jim Rutherford of the Vancouver Canucks is with us. You have you went to Vancouver with a great advantage, and that is you have one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that? By the way, did you know that then, Jim?
Oh yeah.
I'm quite sure you did. But you'd have to concede that's such a fundamentally important piece of the puzzle, almost inarguably the most important piece of the puzzle, that it's almost impossible to win if you don't have good goaltending, and you have great goaltending. I'm not going to say he's the best, but he's in the conversation.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've seen here, Jimmy, is a desire on the part of the organization, and I don't know whether that's you or Bruce or just generically, that he play less games. I think he played 61 last year, if I'm not mistaken. Tell me about that. Tell me what, because John will tell you over and over again.
Bob wants him to play 82.
I really don't. I just do not understand the notion of pacing a goaltender over 82 games. Help explain that to me. How about that?
I'd like him to play 82. I know the coach every day he sits there and looks at it, he's going to lean towards playing him 82 games. But you have to be careful of the wear and tear. You know, I believe if you overplay a goalie, he's going to get injured or he's going to get worn down at some point in time. But we'll play Demko as many games as we can. Now, with that being said, we like our goalie that has worked his way up here, Spencer Martin. You know, he's done a really good job in the minors. He played very well for the Canucks last year, albeit in a limited role. And we're hoping he can continue that. And that way we can be comfortable with having two guys.
So the report that you guys are looking to give Demko extra nights off may not be that accurate.
Oh, I think it's like anything. Once you get in the heat of the battle and you're sitting there and you have to win a game that night, but you know, it was a designated time where you were going to go with the other goalie. That'll probably change. Bruce is going to go with Demko. But like I said, if Martin keeps playing the way he played, he's going to be comfortable going with him also. But
I get it. Yeah.
I don't think that anybody can go into the season. It's not like baseball where you have a pitcher and you can only throw so many pitches and things like that.
Exactly.
It's the hockey goalie and he wants to be in there.
Mm.
I think if you really want to drill down on what we're talking about here with Demko, is does he overwork himself in between games? Okay. Because he goes out and works out a half an hour before the other guys get on the ice. He's dripping in sweat before practice even starts. And then he goes a full practice and works really hard. Is there maybe a way to ease off on that a little bit? Mm-hmm. So then he can play more games. I don't know. I guess what whoever's been saying this, if it's Bruce or somebody in the organization, I guess what they mean is, is there a way to better manage how Demko is preparing and how many games he's playing?
Just curious from that, you're an old goaltender. Do you view yourself? Does your own expertise with the position ever stick in your mind when you're talking to your staff and your goalie coach?
Not at all. Not at all. We have a very good goalie coach, and he does a terrific job. My goalie days and goalie style are far from how they play today and the makeup of the person. I can sit up there like everybody else and tell you the nights that he had a good game or there were a couple of goals that he probably should have had. But I do not get involved in how the goalie plays.
We talked about that you were very well aware of how good Demko was before you took the job. Are there a couple of other players that surprised you, or is there a couple of people that you say, wow, he's a lot better than reviews?
Well, when I'm not at a game and I'm at home and in the East, obviously live in Vancouver now, but before I went there, I'd watch Vancouver in the late game. I'd stay up for the late games. So I'd watch Vancouver all the time. So I had a good handle on them, but I knew how good Hughes was. I didn't realize that he was as good. He's better than what I saw of him on TV. Now he's getting a little more mature and used to the league, but he was really good. Potts Colson's another guy that I think is going to become a very, very good player for the Canucks. But the obvious guys like Pettersson, and Horvat, Horvat brings a lot to the team. I like what I saw. I like his leadership. He's a good two-way player. So you get to know these guys a little better. You get to watch them every day, and they're probably a little better than I thought they were.
How did you scout Kuzminko? How did you figure out how to get him, and what was the selling point in Vancouver for him?
Well, we got on that pretty early, and you have to with these situations. Patrick Alvin did a good job working with the agent, with Milstein. They had a lot of communication. Talked about where he'd fit in the team, the opportunity it is for him. And I just think that between Milstein and Alvin, they just did a really good job working together and convincing the player that was the place to be.
There are people out there that have not seen Kuzminko play yet.
Not seen him play.
This guy might have been the best player outside of the National Hockey League last year, correct?
Number two scorer in the KHL, right?
That's right, yeah.
Highly skilled guy, really good on the power play, plays with a lot of skill, can play either wing. The question is with all these players, it's adjusting to the National Hockey League. It's a tough league to play in, and you get a little more attention. But we believe with his skill level, he's going to really help our forwards.
How important is it to have other Russian-speaking players? You signed Mikheyev as a free agent on the 13th. Polkozin, you talked about already. How important is it to have a little bit of a culture buffer for a player like him?
I think it's important. Putz Colson didn't know him that well, but he actually called him a couple of times to convince him to come to Vancouver because he loves it there. And he told them all the positive things about playing with the Canucks and the city of Vancouver and our fans and whatnot. And I think that helped a lot.
How do you rate a player when you've never really seen him play on a – I mean, you talked about the style of play in the National Hockey League, but the style of play in Europe in general is based upon a significantly larger ice surface. Almost every game you see, even when North Americans go there, they're forced to play differently because the ice is larger. How do you project, Jimmy, what a guy who principally you've only seen on large ice is going to fit on the smaller North American ice?
Well, you don't. I mean, you're doing this with hope. And in Kuzminko's case, he's on an entry-level contract, so there's not high risk there. But you're right, because when they're playing in Europe, they've got more space, they've got more time to do things, and that's what I talk about, adapting to the NHL. How is that going to work? You got to think quicker, you got to do things quicker. But I find with the skill guys, as long as they're willing to go to the net, which Kuzmenko is, it's where he likes to go on the power play also, he should be okay. But you really don't know until they get here.
Yeah. Any promises made to him about ice time?
No, we don't make promises. No, certainly he will be given the opportunity to play with good players. There will be patience in the early going. You got to give a guy like that a little leeway and lots of opportunity. But, you know, we have 20 other players to deal with, and we're there to win games. It's not about one player.
How would you evaluate the performance of the team after you and Gabby moved in there? I mean, there was great enthusiasm in the marketplace. Hockey fans sort of forgot about the miserable first half and got on board the attempt to get to the playoffs. Do you think it relaxed things around your team and to some extent around you too?
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about how relaxed I am. It's more about the players. But the players had more fun. They were having more fun what they're doing. Sure. And that's what Bruce Boudreau does. You know, he has a certain approach, and, you know, he motivates. He brings the most out in the players. Now, we were pleased with the number of games we were winning, and we ran out of runway, you know, to ultimately get to the playoffs. But we made it pretty close. But we have to get off to a good start. I think we got to get to the point that we don't rely as much on our goalie. I mean, we're going to rely on him. All teams do at certain times, but it can't be game after game. We have to tighten things up a little bit. And I would like to think with the changes we've made up front, with more depth on our forwards, more balance, and hopefully with a healthy defense, we can do that.
You should be faster though, right?
We should be faster. That was something we wanted to do. One of the things, without having a lot of natural speed on our team, that Bruce was able to do was convince the players to play quicker. And we were able to do that.
The other aspect of the relationship with Bruce and Patrick and yourself is, you know, the science of the game. Bruce is not necessarily an analytics guy. That's not to say he doesn't look at the numbers, but where are you and what's your expectation of how Bruce should use analytics coming up?
Well, that's up to him. You know, I mean, he's got to do what he does best and then use the people around him that maybe are some of the things that he's not as comfortable doing. But you look at his record, you look at his career, he's been a very good coach in the league. He should continue to do what he's doing. And some of the other things that maybe we need to improve on, he can give that to his assistant coaches or give it to other people. But I don't think that this is a time for Bruce to change his approach.
But you do believe in the, we've talked about this before with you. You're a big believer in analytics, correct?
I believe in analytics. We have a very good analytics department. I use them all the time. I don't make my final decision on them, but it's a great checkpoint when we're looking at what our scouts are saying or what our coaches are saying and things like that. And if there's a big difference between what the people that are seeing compared to what the analytics are seeing, then we have to have a meeting and we have to figure out why there's such a big gap there and close that gap. What's the reason? You know, is the analytics closer to being right? Or the people that are seeing in person what's going on, or are they closer to being right? But I think it's a great tool and we have a great department.
Gabby is known for being a guy, he's told us on many occasions here, and, you know, we've observed this with his past clubs. He believes in offense, not necessarily more than defense, but he is not a defensive coach per se. He likes to play in the opponent's zone. He likes to score goals. You had a team in Pittsburgh that liked to play in the offensive zone, liked to score goals, and you had the talent to be able to do it. Is there any issue with that? Are you more of a Do you have a greater defensive philosophy than your head coach maybe does?
The best defense in our league is if you're playing in the offensive zone.
Yes.
And if you're controlling the puck more, I don't want to say you don't have to worry about playing defense, because there's times in the game that you do. But I do not have any issues with playing the game more on the offensive side than the defensive side.
Yeah. How much did you know the Twins before you got to Vancouver?
Just from what I had read about them, watched them. Was always very impressed with them. But I got to tell you, once you meet them, you're even more impressed. And I really like what's happened here with them now. They have a real comfort level what they're doing in the organization. They have a real good working relationship with Patrick, and they're at a point with what they're going to do that I think they can have more impact on the Canucks.
So just to be clear, what kind of impact is that? Is that on the player development side more than anything else?
They're going to work more on a day-to-day basis with the players. Instead of being up in the front office, they're going to be more, they're going to be on the ice a lot more, whether it's in Abbotsford at times, and they like going to Abbotsford, working with those young players, or whether it's going to be on the ice with the Canucks, working with players on certain drills while practice is on, or working with players before and after practice, and just being around the dressing room, where those young guys can approach them and ask them different questions about different things.
Sorry, John. This seems like a rather unique approach. Have you ever had anything similar to this?
Yes. When Ron Francis first got into the front office, he was close with the players. Brind'Amour was close with the players. So, yeah, I've had this situation before.
The interesting thing about superstars, because let's face it, they're superstars, they're going to the Hall of Fame, is that sometimes the way they see the game, the regular player can't. And great players aren't necessarily great communicators or great coaches. What do you think differentiates these guys?
These guys are really humble guys, okay? And they remind me of the Rod Brind'Amour and Ron Francis as to their approach with players. Sure, they're going to tell players certain things that the player's not capable of doing. The biggest thing for guys like that is not to be frustrated because the player can't do it.
Right.
They have to understand that the star players, some of those things come natural and other players struggle to do it. But I can assure you that the Sedins have the right temperament to work with these players and understand that.
Well, we wish you a happy rest of,
Can I ask one more question?
I can't stop you. So
yeah, I know. What's it like? You talked about it when we talked to you the last couple of times about being able to manage and run an operation in a Canadian city. Is it that much different?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I really like it in Vancouver because of the passion of the media, the passion of the fans. It's just a great hockey province, and there's great pride there. There's frustration, of course, because it's a franchise that's been in the league a long time and hasn't won a cup. But at the same time, they've had some good years. Mm-hmm. But the years here of late have been pretty lean, and we've got to get this team back to contending.
Finished now, John?
Yeah, I could go on, but Jimmy's held the phone up long enough already.
Yeah, Jimmy's been holding the phone for a long period of time here. I'll give him a little rest. I know August, you never really shut down, but August tends to be pretty quiet, and then you get right back into it. So we hope it's quiet for you and enjoyable for the next month, and then back to the grind. We always appreciate you coming on. We thank you very much, and look forward to doing it again somewhere down the road.
Yeah, well, August is quieter. It's not necessarily quiet. Okay. But it's quieter because we still have a lot of work to do with our team. But But thanks. I enjoyed being on with you guys.
By the way, Jimmy, you've got your prospects camp in Penticton in September. You are going to love it there. You're going to love playing. The situation in that arena is fantastic. It's the Western Canada version of Traverse City. You're going to have a blast.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to it. And then, of course, Kenny Holland's going to be there, the king of Traverse City. So, we're really looking forward to getting this going again.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Rutherford, thank you very much. All the best. Yeah. We'll talk again down the road.
Okay, thanks, guys. Take care.
We'll be back after these messages. All right, we're back. McCown, Shannon, thanks to Jimmy Rutherford for joining us.
He always has fun. He's always has fun.
You don't know that.
Yeah, I do.
You have fun because you dominate the conversation. I barely slipped in two or three questions.
Stop it. Oh, text from Jim Rutherford right here. I enjoyed it. Thank you. There it is right there.
Well, I don't have one.
No.
He only talks to you.
Correct.
I asked fewer questions, but I think mine were more insightful. Anyway.
Oh, please. You didn't even know who Kuzmenko was.
Oh, I certainly did.
I think
more about him than you did, I think.
No, you just said he was the second leading scorer in the KHL.
Well, aren't you surprised and impressed that I even knew that?
No, I was shocked.
There you go.
Now our new KHL reporter, Robert McCowan.
Well, and then I asked him from about the guy who plays on the big ice, and he acknowledged that it's difficult. You can't simulate being on the smaller ice surface.
You go.
I was filled with insightful questions.
The king of international hockey, Bob McCowan.
There you go. haven't watched an international game from beginning to end. Well, other than a Team Canada game in my life.
Yeah. Oh, well.
You don't get that many opportunities, but if you really wanted to, you could watch some KHL hockey or Swedish or Finnish.
Champions League, sure. You could watch. TSN has it all the time. So
wouldn't watch that for a second. And I was a guy for a period of time who was a proponent of a larger ice surface in the NHL. Remember when we used to talk a lot about that?
Sure. Yeah,
not going to the European surface, but something in between.
Yeah, the Finns have a 95 wide rink. I'm actually a proponent of smaller ice surface, but I always have been. I think the best and most exciting hockey we've seen in the last 50 years.
Why?
The Montreal Forum, Boston Garden, Chicago Stadium, Buffalo Memorial Auditorium, and they had smaller ice surfaces. I just think that, you know, difference between quickness and speed. I think in the smaller ice surfaces, quickness becomes a bigger factor and it becomes more exciting and there's more contact. And I still love contact in hockey.
Well, as long as they're not fighting.
Contact. Yeah, no, but body checking. I still think body checking is an important part of the game and physical contact without fighting. Agreed.
I've always believed that.
Yeah.
People used to accuse me of being anti-contact and I'm not. No. I was anti-fight.
Yeah.
And fights, I've said before, I think fights are okay. If they aren't staged.
Correct.
If they come as a result of something that happened seconds before on the ice that pissed you off.
Yeah.
And you feel the need to retaliate in one way or another. I understand that because that's human. That's a human reaction.
I'm with you.
We saw a couple of good things last night.
Actually, let me guess what the two things you thought were. Can I guess?
Yeah.
The standing ovation for Albert Pujols.
No, nope.
Okay. I thought that was really, really.
Well, I think it's really nice.
Yeah, I thought
and respectful, and totally. He deserves it.
And he, as Danny Shulman said, I think he started to tear up there. I think he really did. And then the reaction and the congratulations of having Buck Martinez back in the broadcast booth and the way the stadium handled that as well.
Well, yes, and obviously this was planned and coordinated, and Sportsnet. Did not go to a commercial break.
Right.
In that, was it middle of the second?
I think so. Yes.
And, I figured they'd do something more than just welcome back Buck. Not that that wasn't.
Well, on the TV side, they certainly did more than that in the pregame show and a couple of other times, but in stadium.
Yeah. Well,
I thought they managed it well.
On board with it. Yeah. Anyway, it was really nice to see. And you know what also was nice to see? More for Buck than anybody else. But really, I don't know whether it was the entire bench but almost every Blue Jay player came out of the dugout, looked up at the booth, and was applauding or waving, nodding, whatever they were doing. That was really, really nice. And I don't know whether the players were encouraged to do that, told to do that, but it was very respectful to our friend Buck Martinez.
Indeed, and the Toronto Blue Jays played a baseball game the way I think a lot of people expected them to play all season, right?
Well,
Barrios pitched well early, and then
Barrios was okay.
Well, let me put it this way: Barrios pitched well enough. How's that?
Yeah, I guess.
Then the Blue Jay bats came alive.
Well, did they ever? Once again, I mean, you got to start wondering about total runs scored in consecutive games. Mm-hmm. What kind of, you know, they already set a record with the Boston series. They scored 40 runs in three games, which is the most ever. And now they tack on another 10. After that, that's 50 in four games. Mm-hmm. Mind you, their average per game has gone down.
Yeah.
After scoring 10.
Yeah. Hey, so have you checked the standings today?
Blue Jays are number three.
No, yeah. But see who's number five in the division?
No.
Boston. Baltimore's ahead of them.
Oh, in the division. Sorry.
In the division. Baltimore is now ahead of the Red Sox.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, we're so used to the Orioles winning 60-something games and finishing dead last by 50.
Yeah.
When they got off to a terrible start, as usual, and were a million games back, they've been probably better than any other team in the East, maybe with the exception of the Yankees, over the last, 30?
I was going to say, 30 games, half this,
30, 40 games?
They're a going concern. You can't look at the schedule and say, oh, Baltimore, there's a sweep. Can't do that anymore.
Remember how shocking would it be if the Orioles actually made the wild card race?
Well, they're not far out, Bob.
They're not.
No.
They actually aren't.
We got to go.
You know, Seattle went on that 14-game run, and that's come to an end, and the Red Sox are inept as can be.
Yeah.
Who knows? Baltimore's not far off. Yeah. We got to get out of here. We'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.